I think we should just dance a little longer.
Yeah.
Go, 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 go. Hey, everybody.
Hey, hey.
Hey. Hey, friend.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, everybody. What are we doing?
I don't know.
We're just here.
It's not my week.
It isn't?
It's your week.
Oh, shit. Welcome, everybody, to another amazing week of Case Files with Kat.
And Ashley.
Yeah. Oh, man. She's had a day. I'm having a day. We're just having days over here. This is it. But we're drinking beer.
Yes.
We are together.
Yes.
We have our protection candle lit.
Yes.
It is lit. Check. We've got Kevin.
He's knocked over. He's passed out.
I've got my Astros earrings and my Astros koozie. I'm ready.
I got my Bucky's Beaver shirt on.
There you go.
It's not even the right season.
Go Bucky's. You have the Mardi Gras.
I have one for every season, though, except for July 4th, because I hate the July 4th ones. But I do have one for every season. In case anyone is wondering what my wardrobe consists of. It's a lot of shirts.
It's a lot of those. It is. It's a lot of those. But anyway, how has your week been?
I'm just going to lie and say it's been great. Okay. It's been so great. It's been wonderful. I'm so happy. And so life is so great.
We see right through you, even though we can't see you, is basically.
It is just the most amazing week of my life.
She had a really shitty day. Dogs attacking each other. And
oh my God.
There's a liquid bandage.
One bit my hand.
Liquid band-aids for dogs. Who knew? You know.
Anyways, yes, it's been fun.
But you know who we have seen in the last week? Sarah.
Oh, yes. I was like, who have we seen? Yes.
And I got to tell her all about how I had two.
How she interrupted me during my story to talk about. Sarah.
I accidentally had two double IPAs. I didn't know they were double IPAs.
Yeah.
Oof, I got drunk. Sorry, y'all. but you, my friend, are drinking tonight.
Yes, they bribed me and bought me.
What am I getting out of it?
I'm pretending you didn't talk about Sarah last time.
Oh, okay.
It's Southern Star Tejas hot chocolate stout, and it is delicious.
Is it who?
Southern Star.
Southern Star. Oh, great.
They are just great. They're from Conroe. I was like, it's 7.25%. It really doesn't taste like that, though. But if you've never had it, it's a stout brewed with vanilla beans, cocoa beans, cinnamon, and peppers. Excuse me, cocoa nibs. Cinnamon and peppers, and it is so delicious. I've had they had a different variation before and it was really good, but this is better. I really like this. It's very smooth.
Is it like it seems so holiday-y? No.
It's an all of the time.
All of the time. I mean, it sounds very Mexican hot chocolate.
Yeah, it doesn't to me, it doesn't necessarily taste like hot chocolate. So good.
Oh, it's good. I'm glad.
It's delicious. What are you drinking?
I haven't had this one in a while. This is a High Lie from Cigar City Brewing out of Tampa. I know. I'm drinking a not Texas beer. It's been a while. I do love this beer. It's regular old IPA, but it's delicious. So this is what I'm having.
Does this say hot chocolate stout in Spanish?
I can't read that far away.
Cerveza para la gente que la gustan el chocolate day. I was just curious. I knew that's beer for the something. Okay. I just didn't know God. If you knew what it meant from there.
Okay. Cerveza para la gente que la gustan el chocolate.
Yeah. What's that mean in English?
Beer for the people who love
hot chocolate.
Oh, no, not hot chocolate.
Oh.
Chocolate.
Oh, well, either way, it's not for you because you don't like chocolate or stouts.
If it's like a Milk Dud or a Kit Kat.
This is really good. I'm going to drink this for you and start your story.
Oh, I just hit the table. Sorry, got up to get the look at our beer. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and get started on my story because it's kind of big.
All right.
And then I know there's probably going to be lots of like sidebar. Oh, one more thing I forgot to say kind of things because it's another one of those. I did lots of research and now I know too many things. But you're welcome, everybody. I just at one point was like, you know what? There's so much in the middle of this person's life that I was like, let's just Wikipedia the bait, like the hot bullet points and just go through that. Cause there's really just so much, there's so much information. Okay. So, I was telling Ashley earlier, tonight is actually one I've been wanting to do for a long time. It's the tab, the first tab that's been open on my phone. Like, okay, this is the next one you're going to do. And then something else happens and I don't do it, but it is about a serial killer, shocker. But this one actually wrote an autobiography and, that doesn't happen so often, you know, and it's actually not written poorly. He writes like he talks, but I think they talked a lot better back then. Like, yeah. Very, you know,
just interesting that a serial killer would write their own biography.
I'll get into that in a second. But so one of my biggest sources is obviously his own writing. So I'm going to reference his own writings, which came in the form of letters. So tonight I'm going to tell you about Carl Panzram, the serial killer you've never heard about. He's really one of the meanest. He was a mean person. I don't know that he was born like that, but he definitely ended up that way. He was angry all of the time. You'll hear why, but he was angry all of the time. I just almost said hangry. That's how I get sometimes. No, but he was just 100% angry all of the time. He didn't stand a chance personified. Like you say that phrase, you look it up in the dictionary and it's this man's face. Like it's terrible. He didn't stand a chance. And I will apologize now because, when I do his writings, I've already tried not to do a voice.
You have a voice.
There's a voice. It just was us practicing it, and then it just came out, and I'm like, oh, no.
Who were you practicing with?
I was practicing it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like you and Sarah were practicing in case I didn't show up for some reason.
But I watched a documentary on him, and I listened to the last podcast guys, and it's all the same voice, and it's just like my reaction is just to also do that same voice.
Okay, great. I'm
just
ready.
So that so you're excited. Ready. So sorry, not sorry.
I'm excited. I'm ready for it.
Okay, so here's probably it'll probably start and then I'll stop it. But okay, here's probably his most famous quote.
I feel like I should look at you while you do this. I know.
Do you have Kevin?
All right. Do you have Kevin?
I feel like I'm going to do like Batman.
That would be great.
Because that's kind of what you see this guy as a big dude. Anyway, in my lifetime, I have murdered 21 human beings. I have committed thousands of burglaries, robberies, larcenies, arson. And last but not least, I have committed sodomy on more than 1,000 human beings. For all of these things, I am not the least bit sorry. I have no conscience, so that does not worry me. I don't believe in man, God, nor the devil. I hate the whole damned human race, including myself.
I mean,
cheerful fella. Just cheery, right? And the writing that I'm reading from are they even exist thanks to an ex-prison guard named Henry Lesser, who met Panzram towards the end of his life, obviously, at a DC jail. And Henry was a retail menswear store employee.
Oh.
And he got fired because he was trying to unionize the employees, which during the 20s, 30s, this was looked down upon. And so he was fired. So he had to get a new career. And he, through his connections, he wanted to work at like a boys' reform school. He seemed like a very nice person. Yeah. But they didn't have any openings. And so someone said, well, we actually have openings at the DC jail for corrections officers. So he went and he worked there. And there was a correctional officers training school that he went down to Alabama, to go, you know, went to the school, and he was like, there's a whole documentary. There's a whole like interview with him. San Diego State University did an interview with him. It's on YouTube. The link's in the show notes. But he says like they're the teacher of this class. He doesn't even know how he got hired because he was like a saint. Like this is like almost like a Christ-like figure to him. He said that Christ-like. And he was taught through this correctional officer's training, and this was in, you know, 20s, 30s, that you should treat prisoners like human beings. You know, there's no need.
What a novel concept.
There is, and at this time.
Yeah.
This was the time of, like, torture treatments. People thought, you know, you need to isolate them to make them closer to God and, you know, all these things. And so it was just really different. And he was already tempered that way. That's how he would treat a prisoner anyway. And so it was like, great, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And so they said, you know, just be kind. You don't have to be an asshole all the time, right? So they go out to the yard, and a couple of the prisoners that were in the yard recognized Henry and came up, and they actually shook his hand. And as soon as he shook hands with the prisoner, he gets hauled off, and they're like, is this true? Did you shake hands with a prisoner? He's like, yeah, I knew them from another place. Like, it was just beyond their comprehension.
But didn't their training tell them to treat them like human beings?
I don't think that they knew what they were being trained.
Oh.
Like, that's why he was like, how did they hire that guy? Like, why did they hire that guy?
Gotcha.
Go through this really nice training and then forget everything you've learned, basically. Here's what not to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so he was just really, really different. So he goes in and they start telling him about, there's this prisoner and he's a real tough guy, like, holy crap. And so then he goes and he kind of makes his way and he just strikes up a conversation. And within a day or two, he's taken down and he's, Panzram, I'm sorry, is taken in and is actually tortured overnight. He finds out about it. Henry Lesser does finds out about it. And so he had one friend that was also a guard and he said, give him this dollar so he can go to the commissary with it. Gave him a dollar. And so the guy goes, hey, Henry Lesser, Officer Henry Lesser gave you this dollar. And he's like, what? Why is he being nice to me? Like, he didn't believe it.
Yeah.
And so they struck up a conversation. They struck up a friendship. He encouraged Carl Panzram to write his stories. And so every few days or every day, there'd be another few pages and that he would smuggle in paper and a pencil. And then he would write a few stories and then he would pick them up that night and that kind of thing. So they had this little thing going. It's a book. It's a book now.
Yeah.
And he held on to those papers for 40 years. And after San Diego State interviewed him, he was like, do you want to take over ownership of these papers? And so now all of this is at San Diego State and in the archives there. And the Panzram papers, that's what those are. So they are all handwritten, but then it was typed out later. So you're going to hear me talk about that. Mr. Lesser died October 27th, 1983 in Los Angeles County. So RIP. And there is a great interview with him on YouTube. And so that's in the show notes as well. All of this is in the show notes. Okay. So let's just start from the beginning because it goes downhill pretty quick, pretty, pretty quick. All right. So Carl Panzram was born on January 28th, 1891 on a farm near East Grand Forks, Minnesota, the sixth of seven children born to East Prussian immigrants, John and Lizzie Panzram. East Prussian immigrants. I had to look this up. This is like, they were German sort of descent, I think. And so there's a lot of times where like, cause I was seeing German immigrants, but they like, that's actually part of Lithuania. Mm-hmm. That was like at the time was over, like that was under Russia. So East Prussia, and then it was, so that was really hard to figure out. I was like, why do they say German? Yeah. But they expelled the Germans from East Prussia. So that might have been why they ended up in the United States. Anyway, so Panzram and his six siblings were made to work on the family's dirt farm from a young age until truancy laws, which made it illegal for parents to not send their children to school.
Oh.
I know. So that came into effect. So a dirt farm is basically a farm that's been overworked. I had to look this up too. Like, it's now it's not as viable as it used to be. So you have to work a lot harder at it. Yeah. And then it just like, if you do one crop too long, it ruins it. So you kind of switch it out anyway. So, so here's what he has to say about having to work on the farm. Gonna try really hard. All my family are, sorry, see, it doesn't sound right if I don't do it right. All my family are as the average human beings are. They are honest and hardworking people, all except myself. I have been a human animal ever since I was born. When I was very young, at 5 or 6 years of age, I was a thief and a liar and a mean, despicable one at that. The older I got, the meaner I got. My father and mother split up when I was about 7 or 8 years old. The old man pulled out one day and disappeared. This left my mother and a family of six on a small, worked-out farm. As fast as the older boys grew up, they also pulled out. One died. This left me, my sister, one older brother, and my mother. My sister and I were sent to school during the days, and as soon as we came home in the evenings, we were put to work in the fields where my older brother and mother were always at work, from daylight until long after dark sometimes. That doesn't sound like a great life.
He looks like a scary dude.
Yeah, but kind of cute, right?
He looks scary.
Like the younger version.
I didn't look at the younger version.
He kind of looks like a Jude Law and like... who's the guy that plays Venom?
Tom Hardy?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He's a bit beefier than Tom Hardy and Jude Law, but it's like if you put their two faces together. I don't know. Like, there's a couple of different pictures. Anyway. So, I mean, it's a cute gay man. Anyway, so Panzram's parents were not happy to have their children sent to school during the day because they couldn't work, obviously. So they would make them, the mom would make the kids work through the night, sometimes into the morning. He would sometimes just get hours of sleep, and then he'd have to go to being at school and trying to stay awake and behave and all these things. And he'd get in trouble, and then he'd get home and then he'd be punished. And so some of those punishments were being chained up or being starved as a baby. I mean, he was a child. So
he's stressing me out.
So this is just the beginning. So here's Panzram again. My portion of pay consisted of plenty of work and good sound beating every time I looked cockeyed or done anything that displeased anyone who was older and stronger and able to catch me and kick me around whenever they felt like it. And it seemed to me then, and still does now, that everything was always right for the one who was the strongest, and every single thing that I'd done was wrong. Everybody said so anyway. But right or wrong, I used to get plenty of abuse. Everybody thought it was all right to deceive me, lie to me, kick me around whenever they felt like it. And they felt like it pretty regular. At this time, that is the way my life was lived until I was about 11 years old. You're thinking like, this is like an older child and this is like this kid. Yeah. Like now we're 11. Like this life sucks. At this point, you have no happy memory at this point.
Yeah.
So Panzram's run-ins with the law started in 1899 at the age of 8. He was charged in juvenile court with being drunk and disorderly.
Oh my God.
And in 1903 at age 11, he was arrested and jailed for being drunk and incorrigible, a term used when detaining youth. So incorrigible. Yeah.
Why weren't the parents arrested if your 8-year-old is drunk and disorderly?
I mean, they're poor. What are you gonna do? Not long after the second arrest, Panzram stole some cake, apples, and a revolver from a neighbor's home. Here are his words. Right there and then, I began to learn about man's inhumanity to man. They started me off by trying to beat the Christian religion into me, and the consequences were that the more they beat and whipped me, the more I hated them and their damn religion. They beat me and whip me for doing this and not doing that. Everything I seemed to do was wrong. Just at the time I was 11, 12, or 13 years old, I was just learning to think for myself. I first began to think that I was being unjustly imposed upon. Then I began to hate those who abused me. Then I began to think that I would have my revenge just as soon as and as often as I could injure someone else. Anyone at all would do. Or if I couldn't injure those who injured me, then I would just injure someone else. From that day to this, I have followed that line of thought. From the time I was 12 years old, I have been in jail almost continuously until now, when I am 36. I have spent 20 years of my life in prison. Wow. Sad. I mean,
yeah.
Don't feel sorry for him, but I can.
Yeah.
Sad.
Unfortunately, I do feel kind of
sad. I mean, yeah. As the kid version of him. Like,
yeah, the kid version.
Someone should have stepped in somewhere and been like, y'all need to stop.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have a chance to escape. Yeah. And he was one of the youngest. So, October 1903, Panzram's mother sent him to the Minnesota State Training School. So purportedly this was a reform school. So this is where she sent him, where they were trying to beat Christianity into him. Like,
that's a good message.
You know, they beat him, raped him, tortured him, all the things, you know, good Christians. He was repeatedly raped and beaten. He does claim this in his biography, and raped by staff members in a workshop the children dubbed the paint shop due to leaving the room painted with bruises and blood.
Oh my God.
Blech. So here's one of the ways the boys would be tortured. So the paint shop was a very ingenious contrivance. These are big words that, you know, it's like, oh, he wrote these. For inflicting the worst punishment where it could do the least harm and the most good. They used to have a large wooden block, which we were bent over and tied face downward after first being stripped naked. Then a large towel was soaked in salt water and spread on our backs from the shoulders down to the knees. Then the man who was to do the whipping took a large strap of about an inch thick by 4 inches wide, took like a strap, like, which is,
yeah,
to hit with, and about 2 feet long, with a handle on it about 2 feet long. This strap had a lot of little round holes punched through it. Every time that whip came down on the body, the skin would come up through these little holes in the strap, and then after about 25 or 30 times of this, little blisters would form and then burst. And right there and then, hell began, because the salt water would do the rest.
Can I just say, I can see how he became a serial killer. I'm surprised he didn't become one sooner.
I mean, he was a child.
They didn't produce more serial killers, right, in the school.
About a week or two later, a boy might be able to sit down. Maybe, if he didn't sit down on anything harder than a feather pillow. So this place sounds like hell. Anyway, Panzram hated the school so much that he decided to burn the paint shop down. And he did so successfully and without detection in 1905.
Good for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so there became the art. Then the arson started. That's so great. That's just the beginning. So Bob Dylan actually wrote a song about this place called The Walls of Red Wing. And it was a protest song where he describes the students there as thrown in like bandits. I'm not going to do Bob Dylan's voice. Thrown in like bandits and cast off like criminals. The walls of barbed wire and the fence with electricity sting. The guards holding their clubs like they were kings. And then there was like a dungeon in the building, which I think may have been referenced to the paint shop. But
you're making it very hard to not root for this serial killer. I'm just letting you know.
He gets really bad. I know. But he does get really bad. Like, he's a child right now.
Yeah.
He lives to 36. Okay, so, I mean, it's not great. His life is not great. But yes, he didn't stand a chance. That's why he is all of that in a bag of chips. Okay. Anyway, in 1906, Panzram was paroled from Red Wing, and by his early teens, Panzram exhibited alcoholism, and he already had a very lengthy criminal sheet, the rap sheet. mostly for burglary and robbery stuff. So petty stuff. At 14, after he paroled, he went home and was expected to work on the farm. And he was like, fuck that. I'm going to, you know what? I want to be a Lutheran minister. And his mom was like, awesome. So he goes to the seminary. Like how she bought, she bought it. I'm sure she was like, get, you know, so anyway, so he wanted, I mean, the man who was just talking about how, yeah. you know, he talks about how the school taught him the hypocrisy of Christianity, you know, like,
yeah.
and then here he is going off to seminary. Well, it didn't last long. Okay. LOL. That didn't last long at all. Because, I mean, well, he's Carl Panzram at yeah. this point. But also kids were starting to figure out that he came, went to a reform school. So yeah. he would pass them in the hallways and they would just go, reform school. Like what that was, insult. That would be right. But then he would be yeah. like, fuck you. And he would start like fights. And so, you know, he would get in trouble all the time and he hated it. But there was this one minister there. They called him a Lutheran cleric. He really got on him a lot too. And so Carl really hated him. So he planned on killing him. And so one day they got into a scuffle, a gun fell out from whatever Carl had and he picked it up and without like hesitation, pointed it at the guy's head, bang, 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 shot him. And but the gun didn't go off. Like he didn't.
Oh my God.
I know. But like without hesitation, he did not think twice about yeah. it and he was going to do it. And so they said, okay, you got to go. And it wasn't like you're going to the penitentiary again. They were like, well, it didn't work out. Sorry, bud. Safe travels.
Yeah.
You know, they just kind of, you tried to kill one of us and.
They probably just wanted him as far away as possible.
I know. So why not send him to the jail, to the big house, lock him up. He tried to kill a priest, you know, or a minister or whatever. I don't know. It's like
they probably couldn't prove it.
This isn't going to work. It's not you. It's me kind of a thing. It just seems so like light-handed, yeah. you know, just kind of weird. Anyway, so safe travels. So he wasn't home wasn't great either. So Carl ran away from home to just live on the streets. He was like, I am going to be a hobo and I'm going to have this gun. I'm going to shoot Indians and be like a cowboy. And so like, yeah. he's young still at this point. Right.
Yeah.
And this is not far after, there were cowboys and Indians and there yeah. were those kinds of, you know, massacres and things like that. And so he kind of did have this, I'm going to shoot all the Indians kind of sort of weird
mentality.
Yeah. I mean, it's back then, early yeah. 1900s, you know, anyway, so he traveled via train car. So he was a hobo. And later at like 14, he meets these four other guys on the railway who seem nice. And well, let me just go ahead and tell you what he says about that.
All right.
Are you just really not, I can see your face like, oh, here it goes. Okay. So one experience I had during that time, I never forgot. And it had a direct bearing on a lot of my actions later in life. I was riding in a boxcar one night in the West. I was alone and feeling that I would like someone to talk to. So I walked over the train until I came upon an open lumber car. There were four big, burly bums in it. When I saw them, I told them about the nice, warm boxcar I had just left. It was clean and full of straw. They all immediately got interested and friendly and told me to lead them to it. I did, but I very soon wished that I hadn't, because just as soon as we all got in the car and shut the door, the train pulled out. They all began to tell me what a nice boy I was and how they would make me rich. They were going to buy me all the silk underwear in the land. I would soon be wearing diamonds as big as baseballs. In fact, they promised me everything in the whole world, but first they wanted me to do a little something for them. When they told me what they wanted from me, I very soon began to figure that there was just no place for me. I told them no, but my wishes didn't make any difference to them. What they couldn't get by coercion, they proceeded to get by force. I cried, begged, and pleaded for mercy, pity, sympathy, but nothing I could say or do could sway them from their purpose. I left that boxcar a sadder, sicker, but wiser boy than I was when I entered it. After that, I always went alone whenever and wherever possible. Breaks your heart. Because now it's all downhill. It was all downhill earlier, but it's all downhill really now. So in the summer of 1906, he was arrested for burglary in Butte, Montana, and sentenced to 1 year's imprisonment at Montana State Reform School in Miles City. He claimed after a guard punished him, he assaulted and critically injured the man with a wooden board. As punishment, Panzram had to spend some time in solitary confinement. The following year, Panzram and a fellow inmate named James Benson escaped from Montana State Reform School and stole guns in Terry, Montana. So in the coming weeks, Panzram and Benson left a trail of destruction along the U.S.-Canadian border as they repeatedly broke into stores and burned them down. They also loved to do this. So this was happy time. And they really loved to do this to churches. So they would go in, steal what they could, and then burn the place down. Because, you know.
Why not?
But he didn't make a lot. They didn't make a lot of money doing that.
How old was he at this time? Like 14? I feel like he's very young still.
1906.
To be sent to a reform school versus jail, I just feel like he's...
Okay, so this is 1907, and he was, do math, he was born in...
Oh, I'm over it.
91.
I don't know.
That's too much math.
That's too much math. I'm a communications major.
Okay, so anyway. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. I already lost my place. God darn it.
He's 16.
Okay, good. All right. I think. So in Fargo, North Dakota, the two men separated. So later in 1907, after getting drunk in Helena, Montana, in a saloon there, he decided he was going to enlist in the United States Army.
Seems legit.
I mean,
seems like the total path I saw coming.
Like, so you're going from one prison to another? Okay, well, that surprisingly does not last very long.
Oh, I assumed it's because he wanted to kill people late.
No. Clearly. So he was actually assigned to the 6th Infantry at Fort William Henry Harrison. And so, of course, he just refused to take orders. He was generally just insubordinate. That it did not work out well. He was convicted of larceny for stealing $80 worth. He stole like some supplies. Like there was a suit, I think a uniform he stole, and then like a shitload of these gold little buttons. So like he thought he was going to go into town and sell them for like money, but he was immediately caught. He wasn't good at his crimes.
Obviously.
I mean, the larceny stuff, because he got caught all the time. And I mean, I don't know. He just didn't. I don't think he thought things through. He probably had all kinds of issues like ADHD.
Probably just didn't even care either.
I think he just had a lot of undiagnosed and untreated mental health issues. And, you know, I think one of them was ADHD. And so he's not going to think shit through. He's going to be like, that sounds great. I'm just going to do that. Squirrel. And I think that was probably one of those times. He's like, this sounds like a great idea in my brain. And he went and did it. So he would end up going to Fort Leavenworth, which he ended up at a full-blown United States prison, nice. Federal prison. So he went there between 1908 and 1910 with U.S. Secretary of War William Howard Taft officially approving his sentence. So he is going to hold that grudge against that man who would later be president for a long time. Keep that in your brain.
Okay, got it.
Panzram later claimed that while he had been a rotten egg before imprisonment at the military penitentiary, any shred of goodness left in him was smashed out during his stint in Leavenworth. After his release and dishonorable discharge, he resumed his career as a thief, Shocker. He was stealing items from bicycles to yachts. This man could steal lots of things. So just to kind of give you a couple of just real quick, he was caught and imprisoned multiple times, probably well over 100 times in different jails. But he served prison sentences both under his own name and various aliases. So in Fresno, California, Rusk, Texas, the Dalles. I don't know, Oregon, the Dalles, Oregon, or the Dalles, Oregon, Harrison, Idaho, Butte, Montana, Montana State Prison. He was Jefferson Davis in Butte, Montana, okay. And Jefferson Rhodes, Oregon State Prison. He was Jefferson Baldwin, Bridgeport, Connecticut. He was John O'Leary, Sing Sing Correctional Facility in New York. Also John O'Leary. Clinton Correctional Facility in New York. Also John O'Leary. And in Washington, D.C., Carl Panzram, but they kind of misspelled it with an N. And then Leavenworth, Kansas, again, as Carl Panzram, number 31614.
How do these people not fact check names?
This is 1900-something.
Yeah, but even in the story I did last week with the fake names, like, I just don't understand. I mean, you just get arrested and you just give them a random name?
Yeah, if you're a hobo, you don't have any ID.
Okay.
Jefferson Davis.
I saw a mugshot with that name on it, and I was like, oh, okay.
Jeff Davis.
When you said it, it made sense.
Mm-hmm. So while incarcerated, Panzram frequently attacked guards, refused to follow their orders. Obviously, they retaliated against him with beatings and other punishments. In his autobiography, he talks about that he was rage personified, and that he would often rape men whom he had robbed. He was noted for his large stature. He was about 6 feet tall, but probably weighed almost 200 pounds in just pure muscle, because he went to prisons where you actually had to wear the 50 pound
ball and chain,
and he'd have to carry it. And he did this for 2 months, 4 miles to his work site and back every day. Imagine how in shape these people were. And then after that, to do the heavy pickaxe to the rocks thing, you know, in the quarry or whatever. They were just training them to be gladiators, you know, like
maybe even better killers.
Maybe don't let them move so that you can be like, I don't know. I'm just kidding. That's not true. They shouldn't do that. Okay. So he was very strong. He looked like a tank. I mean, he was just a stocky dude. But yeah, lots of hard labor. And so he could overpower most anybody, really, because, I mean, he had the things. But he really did like to do vandalism and arson, too, and larceny. So he was, along with the raping and the murdering, there was also the stealing, and he was really into that. By his own admission, one of the few times he did not engage in criminal activities was when he was employed as a strike breaker against union employees.
Oh.
He did not engage in violence. Wow. Interesting. I know. Okay, so he claims in 1929, in his autobiography, that after escaping from a chain gang sentence in Rusk, Texas, he went to Ciudad Juarez in Chihuahua, Mexico, in the winter of 1910 to try to enlist in the Federales. So he went from one army to another. He took a train to Del Rio, Texas, and got off in a small town about 100 miles east of El Paso. He later claimed to have abducted, assaulted, and strangled a man about a mile from town, and then stole $35, $566-ish, about 2 years ago, from the victim. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
In the summer of 1911, Panzram, going by the alias Jefferson Davis, he was arrested in Fresno, as I mentioned, for stealing a bicycle, and he was sentenced to 6 months in the county jail for a bicycle.
Wow.
I know, it seems like a lot.
Yeah, it seems real excessive.
Seems excessive. But he escaped after 30 days because fuck that. And so he later claimed that after his escape, he was riding a boxcar in California. He disarmed a man who was armed. And he either called a railway detective or a railway brakeman So somebody who, like, it was their job to go and check the boxcars. So,
yeah,
like, to make sure there weren't people like him on the cars. And he was with another man. And so he raped the brakeman and then forced the other homeless man to also rape the brakeman. So he had to participate in the crime.
Wow.
And then he threw them both off the train.
Sorry, I don't mean to laugh. Just,
so then he,
I just don't see that going.
He's extra. So he then proceeded to Oregon, where he made his living as a logger for a short time. So he doesn't do anything for very long.
This is all just so chaotic. I'm not laughing at the crimes. This is just all so much chaos.
Uh-huh. So he does end up, he gets his wallet stolen, and he was infected with gonorrhea. So it's not that he liked hanging out with women. He had only a couple of actual sexual encounters with women, and there's only one that anyone's really ever really confirmed. And he's like, then I got the clap and I never touched one again. Like, he's like, I'm just going to stick with what I know. I'm just going to go ahead and stick with the sodomy.
All right.
So, but he did he let his hair down with the girls, you know, like he could go out drinking and have a good time. And, you know, that was fun for him. And, but he just, it wasn't sexual at all. Okay. So in 1913, he, going by the alias Jack Allen, it's a new one, was arrested in Oregon for a highway robbery, assault, and sodomy. He broke out of jail after 2 or 3 months again, and he was later arrested in Harrison, Idaho, but again, he escaped. He's really good at escaping.
Yeah.
He was again arrested in Chinook, Montana. I don't know if that's how you pronounce that, but Chinook? Montana, and then he's sentenced to 1 year in prison for burglary to be served at the Montana State Prison. So in April 27th of 1913, he was arrested as he was admitted into the Montana State Prison as Jefferson Davis, and that was in Deer Lodge, Montana. But he escaped on November 13th. Within a week, he was arrested again for burglary. And he gave the name Jeff Rhodes. So he was incarcerated for an additional year. And by his own admission, he committed sodomy the entire time he was imprisoned. By force. So he was released on March 3rd, 1915, with a new suit, $5, and a ticket to the next town, 6 miles away. I would have been like, can you just leave the state? Can you just go somewhere else? Stop coming here.
Can I just ask, is any of his story, like, confirmed?
Actually, yes. And I was just asking. Yes,
sorry.
And that is actually a really good question. And I probably should have put the beginning.
Just because it sounds so chaotic and, like, so hard to believe.
I know. Okay, so right now I'm on.
You asked him to leave this.
Yes.
Ticket.
I'm trying to figure out what page I'm on right now. Okay, I'm on 12. Okay. Oh, so, I know.
And we're not
so he actually says, and this would have been my last quote of his, if you or anyone else will take the trouble and have the intelligence or patience to follow and examine every one of my crimes and actions, you will find that I have consistently followed one idea through my whole life. And so I won't finish it, but he says it several times. All you have to do is look up these cities. Look up these stories, and I actually post. I will be sending you some pictures. I just kind of took clips of some of these like claims of his him killing a boy or two, and then some sailors that were killed, and how a woman picked him out. There's like these short little articles, but almost all of it. Was true, and the only thing that ever was said that he was not was not being honest about was that the paint shop, he said he caused $100,000 in damage, but it was only $25,000.
Oh, okay.
So he's not an appraiser,
obviously.
Like so. that's the one thing. He was hyperbole there, but not really anywhere else.
I was just curious, just that a lot. Just seems like a lot going on in one person's life.
Right. And it's also at the time that there just wasn't a lot of news that maybe made the headlines. And, you know, it happened all over the country, all over the world. Shit. So wait, there's more. And so they were able, and that's why he confessed to 21, but they think that it might have been more than like 100.
Yeah.
Or more. So they're not really sure. Okay. So yeah. So he was given $5 to go to the next town. He rode the rails through Washington, Idaho, Nebraska, South Dakota. And on June 1st, he burglarized a house in Astoria, Oregon, where he was soon arrested while attempting to sell the stolen items. And under the name Jeff Baldwin, Panzram was sentenced to 7 years in prison to be served at Oregon State Penitentiary in Salem, where he was taken on June 24th, 1915. Now, the warden was renowned for being, like, basically he was into the torture. Like, he was into the really fucked up things. He believed in harsh treatments of inmates. He believed in beatings. He believed in isolation. Panzram later stated that he swore that he would never do that 7 years, and I defied the warden and all his officers to make me. So this comes from SandraLondon.com. SandraLondon.com. Though prison reform movements had long since succeeded in banning beating and fire hosing prisoners, Oregon had somehow managed to defy all nationally recognized standards for the civilized treatments of prisoners. Inmates of the Oregon State Penitentiary were compelled to remain silent at all times, walking lockstep with one hand firmly on the shoulder of the man in front, eyes submissively drawn down. Moving out of line or talking instantly drew a clubbing from the guards.
Okay.
I know. In 1915, the most common effort to reform an inmate of this gulag was handcuffing him and hoisting him onto a pillar by his cuffs for an extended lashing with cat-o'-nine-tails. But there were creative variations of the theme. He could be prescribed a dose of salts, which was a brutal whipping while being held down by a handful of other prisoners. If he got jumpy, he might have to be restrained with the jacket, a variety of a straight jacket that almost completely cut off your circulation. Or if that wasn't enough to settle him down, they might have to move him to the restraint machine, a cold, damp concrete floor where the naked prisoner would stand cuffed behind his back to the iron-barred door for 8 hours at a time. That the really hard cases required a bit more aggressive form of rehabilitation. The hummingbird, a sadistic combination of steel, wire, sponge, water, and a little electricity.
Oh.
Yikes. Later that year, Panzram helped fellow inmate Otto Hooker escape from prison, and while attempting to evade recapture, Hooker killed the warden, Warden Minto. Killed him. This event marked Panzram's first known involvement in a murder as an accessory before the fact. And in his prison records, which noted his two aliases, Jefferson Davis and Jeff Rhodes, he falsely gave his age as 30 and his place of birth as Alabama. His only truthful statement was when he stated his occupation as thief. So he didn't lie all the time. No. So Panzram was disciplined several times while at Salem, including 61 days in solitary confinement before escaping on September 18th, 1917, after two shootouts in which he attempted to shoot Chief Deputy Sheriff Joseph Frum. He was recaptured and returned to the prison. And on May 12th, 1918, he escaped again by sawing through the bars of his cell and caught a freight train heading east. He began going by the name John O'Leary, shaved off his mustache to change his appearance, and Panzram would never return to the Northwest. So he allegedly ends up living in New York City. He got a seaman identification card and sailed on the steamship.
Oh, that's not, I didn't know what that meant.
Oh, the seaman. Seaman. Like, seaman.
What?
Seaman.
I'm with you now. Sorry. I was just
I know. Confused. Navy man. I did a seaman.
Got it.
I'm it's really hard to say that without saying seaman. So he, on the steamship James S. Whitney to Panama, and there he tried to steal a small boat with the help of a drunken sailor who killed everyone on board and was arrested. So he's just starting.
Just keeps on going.
Still free, Panzram traveled to Peru to work in a copper mine. After that, he traveled to Chile, Port Arthur, Texas, London, Edinburgh, Paris, Hamburg. He was everywhere, just killing and raping and stealing and killing. So the murder spree begins. So in 1920...
Did you say it just now begins?
It's starting to really ramp it up. Not just these little onesies, twosies, right? So in 1920, Panzram committed a robbery in Newport, Rhode Island. On September 16th of that year, he burglarized William H. Taft's mansion in New Haven, Connecticut.
I love the pettiness. I don't mean to root for the serial killer, but I really do love the pettiness level.
He at this point was a former president. He was no longer, it's like 7 years after he served as president. He specifically obviously targeted this mansion on purpose since his incarceration at Fort Leavenworth. He stole a large amount of jewelry and bonds as well as his Colt 45 handgun. There's some letters and numbers, and I don't know how to.
Okay.
M1911. Sure. So using Taft's stolen money, Panzram bought a small sailing yacht to the Akista. I'm sorry, I have to cough.
Can I just say I'm impressed he didn't burn the mansion down? I'm really surprised.
You know what? Yeah. But maybe it was like brick.
Oh, maybe.
But I just still,
assumed it was still like wood or whatever.
Yeah, but still, you could still damage it.
Or kill William Taft. I mean, obviously we know he didn't, but I'm just saying I'm very surprised he didn't.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I hadn't thought about that. And so anyway, he embarked on this 8-year-long murder spree, which spanned several countries, involved multiple victims, and he does talk about it. So sailing south to New York City for 3 months, Panzram lured sailors before raping them and murdered the men with Taft's stolen pistol. Like, that's fucked up. Subsequently dumping their bodies near Execution Rocks Light in Long Island Sound.
What are Execution Rocks?
So, side note. Let me go back to this. Okay, in the sound. So, in this manner, Panzram claimed to have killed 10 men. The sailor murders ended only after the Akista ran aground and sank near Atlantic City, New Jersey, during which his last two potential victims escaped. And they are unknown. October 26th, Panzram was arrested in Stamford, Connecticut for burglary and possession of a loaded handgun. In 1921, he served 6 months in Bridgeport, Connecticut jail. So side note, Ghost Adventures crew, they actually did an episode at Execution Rocks.
Okay.
And this was season 3, episode 6. And they actually talk about how Execution Rocks got the name before Panzram was even involved, partly because this place existed before, like during the Revolutionary War. And so the British would take people there to execute them. They would execute them by chaining them to rocks during low tide, and they would drown as the tide came up.
Okay, then.
So here comes Panzram just dropping bodies off. And so, like, even now, it's kind of closed. No one really goes there.
Right.
But sailors stay away from.
Yeah.
Stay away from the lighthouse. The lighthouse is fully automated. It was the only time that the lighthouse people were like, "You can leave whenever you want. It's not a 1-year contract. If you want to leave, you can leave." And so people would come and go because they would start, you know, spirits and the whole nine. It was a very dark place.
I can't imagine.
Anyway, so now the light is automated.
Sorry.
Okay, anyway. So he caught a ship to South Africa and landed in Luanda, the capital of colonial Portuguese Angola. So in 1921, is really fucking long. I'm sorry. I'm going to just skip right through. Okay. In Angola, lots of really bad things happen. He does kill some Africans. He overtakes them. He talks about it.
When you say overtake, you mean like overtakes the country?
Or no, like overtakes the people okay, that well, he has.
I'm just asking I could see him becoming like some overlord of a country.
They gave him like an 8-year-old girl, just all kinds of really weird things. He claimed that he raped and killed an Angolan boy who must have been like 11 or 12 years old. In his confession, he wrote, "His brains were coming out of his ears when I left him, and he will never be any deader." I told you, you're not going to feel sorry for him for a lot longer. He also claimed that he hired a boat with 6 rowers, shot the rowers, and then threw their bodies to the crocodiles. So,
sorry.
Just.
What a crazy. It's so crazy.
It's so much. It's so
hard to believe that this is all one person's life.
After his return to the United States, Panzram asserted he raped and killed 2 small boys, beating one to death with a rock on July 18th. 1922 in Salem, Massachusetts, and strangling the other later that year in New Haven. So like I said, I have some newspaper clippings. I don't think that they came from Massachusetts. So I'll have to double check, but there was just so much. There's so much to know about this case. Most, if not all, of his claims could be verified. Yeah. And so there are a lot of things, especially with whatever happened in prison. And he spent most of his life in prison.
Yeah.
All of those things are corroborated. So the attempts to rob and rape and boats to steal, like he does, as one does. And then in June 1923 in Rochelle, New York, he stole a yacht belonging to the police chief of New Rochelle. Wow. He picked up a 15-year-old boy named George Wallowson and promised him a job on the boat, but instead, he raped him. On June 27th, on a river near Kingston, New York, Panzram claimed he picked up a man, but then, believing the man was going to attempt to rob him, Panzram used a .48-caliber pistol from the stolen yacht to kill the John Doe victim. Panzram threw the body into the river. And on June 28th, Panzram and Wallowson docked at Poughkeepsie, New York. So this young boy just stayed with him during all this time. And he referred to him as my boy. Not like, oh, that's my boy. Like, that's my boy.
Yeah.
Like, ugh. Oof. So Panzram stole $1,000 worth of fishing nets. And at Newburgh, New York, Wallowson, having witnessed the murder the day before, jumped overboard and swam to shore. He reported to the police at Yonkers that he had been sexually assaulted by Panzram. An alert went out for Captain John O'Leary. And on John 29th, John O'Leary was arrested. So another alias. So he tried to escape from jail on July 9th. He later conned his lawyer by giving him ownership of the stolen boat in return for bail money. And Panzram skipped bail, and the boat was confiscated by the government agents. On August 26th, O'Leary was arrested in Larchmont, New York, after breaking into a train depot. The man just gets caught every time he tries to do anything. So I don't know. His traveling might have been his better bet. 3 days later, on August 29th, O'Leary was cleared as a suspect in the stabbing death of Dorothy Kaufman in Greenburgh, New York, committed a month prior. He was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment. While in the county jail, he confessed to the alias Jeff Baldwin and that he was wanted in Oregon for murdering of a policeman, Minto, the warden.
Yeah.
After first being imprisoned in Sing Sing Prison in October, Panzram was imprisoned at Clinton Prison in Dannemora, New York, as inmate 75182. He tried to escape there, but he ended up with an injured spine. So, like, he jumped, broke his ankles, broke his back, and they gave him 000 medical help. They did nothing for him. They just put him back in his cell with a broken
you're making me feel bad for him again. With a broken back. Even though he's an awful, horrible human being, you're making me feel bad for him again. Because I cannot imagine what that felt like.
He ended up being permanently disfigured, and like he walked with a limp, and he just had all kinds of issues from that point on. Like physically, he wasn't as indestructible anymore. So August 30th, 1928, he was arrested in Baltimore for a Washington, D.C. burglary. He stole a radio and jewelry from a home of a dentist on August 20th. And then three men were also arrested as accomplices, and most of the jewelry was recovered. He gave him his correct name, but claimed that he was 41 and that he was from Nevada. So still not giving all of the right stuff.
Yeah.
During his interrogation, he confessed to killing three young boys earlier that month, one in Salem, one in Connecticut, and a 14-year-old boy, newsboy in Philadelphia. Panzram's confession to killing a boy at Pier 28 on League Island near Philadelphia was confirmed. So there are some confirmations. Boston police were unable to corroborate his other confession, the murder of a boy in Charlestown, Massachusetts. He later wrote that he had contemplated mass murders. This was like the big plan of his life was to put like a bomb in a train tunnel, and that would blow up.
Yeah.
And that he would be waiting to shoot anybody who survived.
Oh my God.
With like a machine gun.
Yeah.
The other big plan was to start a war between the U.S. and the U.K. and, you know,
sure,
kill way more people. Like this was his. He really thought he could do it. What are you doing? What are you doing, kitty? He really thought he could do it. He just was like, I'm gonna start a war. Shit. In light of his extensive criminal record, Panzram was sentenced to 25 years to life for the stolen radio and jewelry, which seems excessive considering they got the jewelry back.
Yeah.
Don't burn yourself.
And considering they didn't know his other history, I assume.
I mean, he only told them some stuff, but not all the stuff. Right. And so upon arriving at Leavenworth Federal Penitentiary again, he... told the warden, and he was 31614 at this point. He told the warden, I'll kill the first man that bothers me. Because that's what you do in prison. You don't fuck around. You show him who's boss. Leave me the fuck alone, right?
Yeah.
But he was considered too psychotic. So he was assigned to work alone in the prison laundry room, which he liked, where the foreman, Robert Warnke, was known to bully and harass other prisoners under him. I don't know if I'm saying it right. Warnke soon antagonized Panzram, despite the latter repeatedly warning him to back off. And on June 20th, 1929, he beat Warnke to death with an iron bar. He was convicted and sentenced to death for that. He refused to allow any appeals of his sentence. There was a group that was against the death penalty who was advocating for him not to die. And he wrote them back saying, stop. The only thanks you and your kind will ever get from me for your efforts on my behalf is that I wish you all had one neck that I had my hands on. So he like, let me die.
Yeah.
I'm not going to live my life in prison, in this prison. So while on death row, he befriended Officer Henry Philip Lesser, who would give him money to buy cigarettes. I mean, it was like a dollar, you know, that he might have been using Lesser. I think maybe I think he probably played him a little bit. Maybe he could get me off. Maybe like there was something in it for him, but he also had somebody who didn't treat him like an animal, just like a human being, and someone to talk to. And he was writing these 3 pages every day or something, you know, just a lot. He was writing a lot. He explicitly denied having any remorse for any of his actions. And so he starts his whole journal saying, in my lifetime, I have murdered 21 human beings in that sentence. So that's like the very beginning. That's page one, right? Practically. Yeah. He was hanged on September 5th, 1930, as officers attempted to place a customary black hood over his head. He spat in the executioner's face. When asked for any last words, he responded, "Yes, hurry up, you Hoosier bastard. I could have killed a dozen men while you were screwing around." He was buried in the Leavenworth Penitentiary Cemetery, where his grave is marked only with his number 31614. So here are some quotes that you might have seen of his before. I've seen pictures of him with quotes. He said, during my 20 years, in all the various prisons and jails I've been in, I've undergone every kind of abuse and punishment that the ingenious minds of many men could devise. And believe me, men can surely figure out some horrible tortures to impose on other men. I have had the whip, the paddle, the snorting pole, the hummingbird, the hose, the jacket, chained up frontwards, backwards, bucked and gagged, spread-eagled, water-cured, starved, beaten, thrown into sweat boxes and half-cooked, thrown into ice-cold dungeons and half-frozen. I have been in solitary confinement for years at a time where I could have no privileges or pleasures of any kind. Every single thing in life that men hold worthwhile and that go to make life worth living for, I have been denied and deprived of. I have gone through every conceivable kind of torture that one man or body of men can impose on another man. I started out in life enjoying it and hating no one. I am winding it up now by hating the whole human race, including myself, and having no desire to live any longer. For all the misery and tortures that I have went through, I have made other men go through many times over, only worse.
What is a hummingbird? And whatever that, you said before
that. So that's the hummingbird was the one that was the wires and the sponge and the water and the electricity.
Oh, what was the one that you said before the hummingbird?
The
something prod?
The snorting pole.
Yeah, what is the snorting pole?
You hold on to the pole and you get whipped until you start snorting.
Oh my God.
Because you're no longer like screaming, you're just like in so much pain that you're, you know, you're kind of doing that whole thing. Yeah, it's awful.
The human race is so great.
So great. He says, I have lived 36 years in this world and soon I expect to leave it. All that I leave behind me is smoke, death, desolation, and damnation. Signed, Carl Panzram. Another one. Men have made a study of crime, its cause, effect, and the remedy. Many men know the effect. Many men know the cause. I know the remedy. The answer is truth.
Those are powerful words, I gotta say.
He had a sixth grade education.
Yeah.
I am sorry. You're just gonna make you mad now. I am sorry for only two things. These two things are, I am sorry that I have mistreated some few animals in my lifetime. And I am sorry that I am unable to murder the whole damned human race. You may do as you like with that, with this that I have written. Believe it or disbelieve it. Publish it or burn it or hide it or any damn thing you care to do with it. Signed, Carl Panzram. If you or anyone else will take the trouble and have the intelligence or patience to follow and examine every one of my crimes and actions, you will find that I have consistently followed one idea through all my life. I preyed upon the weak, the harmless, and the unsuspecting. Those I harmed were weaklings, either mentally or physically. Those who were strong, either in mind or body, I first lied to and led into a trap where they were either asleep or drunk or helpless in some way. I always had all the best of it because I knew ahead of time just what to expect and the others did not. I therefore was strong in my knowledge and stronger in body than most on those I preyed upon. This lesson I was taught by others. Might makes right. And that is my story.
Well, I don't know how to follow that up, so...
I cut a big portion out, the whole like Africa stuff. There's so much. Like, I really cut out pages because I was like, oh my gosh, we're already at 1:15. But yeah, that it's a lot. And there's so much of it comes from him. And then there's other people who interviewed him, but Henry Lesser, you know, keeping all of that, you can read all of it online. There are several books that are apparently really, really good, but I just took his words. Yeah. I think it's really powerful in his statement, you know, you really want to know what causes crime? Like,
yeah,
he could have been a whole lot of other people. There's so many things that he probably could have done.
Yeah.
Had he had the opportunity, maybe he would have been less evil. Maybe he was always going to be evil. Who knows?
I feel like he was bred to be evil based on his childhood.
He got in a lot of trouble. He probably had some tendencies that were...
There's a big difference between being a thief and a psycho serial killer.
Yeah. Yeah. And he would just say, like, he didn't want to ever admit that he was gay either. He would just say that he'd rather rape than... Because then he's doing something evil and not, like, because he's gay.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was a different way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But he did have relations with, like, one or two women, and he got the clap, and he was done with that. So crazy, right?
Yeah. The whole story was crazy.
I know. There's so much that happens in this short life. Because, really, I'm 10 years older than him when he died.
I'm a...
Yep.
You're older than him.
Like, isn't that crazy? Died.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he died. That's
my
crazy.
My life has not been that. I did get born and raised on a farm, but my life did not.
I thought you said chaotic. I did get born.
No. I was born and raised on a farm.
I thought you said, like, porn. I was like, you got porn on the farm? That's weird.
Born and raised.
With a B. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes. I don't know what I'm doing next week because that's just crazy. So, I mean, I don't know how to follow that up, really.
Because that's a lot. Do we have any? We have, we're going to be taking a break. And so next week is the last week before our little 2-week break. Oh, man,
that's even more pressure.
So we need to remind everybody to send us story ideas.
Send us story ideas, question of the week ideas. Review us, love us, share us. Just let us know you're even listening. You know?
Like, hello? Is there anybody there?
Hello? There's a lot of listens on Buzzsprout, but I don't ever hear from anybody, so.
Drop your girls a line, y'all.
All the people that used to message us and reach out to us don't do it anymore, except for Jesse, because Jesse's Jesse.
Well, Jesse's Jesse.
And Sarah, but she's also here, so.
We see her all the time. And Kathy.
Yes, and Kathy. Kathy's still a avid listener.
Hi, everybody. Love
Did I
y'all.
Tell you Kathy wrote us a, like when Foxy passed away she sent a really sweet card and it was really nice. So if you're listening, Kathy, thank you again.
That was sweet.
So we do have some really great listeners. I just wish more of them would reach out to us and talk to us.
Yeah, man. All right, everybody. Well, until next week, be kind to one another. Don't go murdering people, stealing stuff, you know. Don't do any of that. That sucks. I don't want to do a story. I don't want to do a story on a listener. That'll be like, oh god, they were listeners.
I mean, that'd be kind of cool. Just tell us first.
Oh no, no, not an accessory. None.
Obviously, I'm kidding. Ish. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Please do not
contact Ashley. At Ashley. All right. All right. We love you. We'll see you next week.
Bye.